Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. If you're watching us over the webcam, yes, it did go down over the news break. We just barely, I think, have it back up. And you're probably admiring this lovely young lady sitting back here. This is my wife, Claire, also my business partner, company composer. She's got just got a new piece of music published. And she does most of the music for our show here, including the special Christmas bumps, which we're going to start putting into the rotation here probably in about another couple of weeks. But she's also a political commentator in her own right. She posts quite a bit and comments quite a bit to What Really Happened. And I understand today that you wanted to talk about what's been going on in Pakistan.
Oh, yes. I have been noticing just a tremendous, very rapid uptick in the destabilization of the country as the military and the civilian government attempt to fight the Taliban in areas like Swat and possibly coming up in Baluchistan. And one thing that's very interesting in terms of the escalation of this destabilization, whoever, and we don't necessarily know who's actually doing this, whoever is picking these targets are picking what I would call some hardened targets, like police stations. And today there was an attack on one of the Air Force bases. And you kind of have to wonder, with the mess that we're seeing in Afghanistan and the continual mess that we've got in Iraq, if this has not yet become the next front for Obama's war.
Well, I would tend to agree with you, simply because if you look at a map of that part of the world, and you look at the idea that despite the possibility of this uranium deal going through with Iran, mm-hmm. that would basically evaporate the public justification for the war, Russia has again reiterated it is going to militarily supply Iran with conventional weapons, including very modern anti-air missiles.
Yeah, the defensive systems.
Exactly,
yes.
Very much so. Mm-hmm. The problem is, if you look at that part of the world and spheres of influence, Russia only has two routes by which it can supply Iran over the ground. One is through Georgia, Ossetia, that the tunnels through the Caucasus Mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is through Pakistan, which is also where most of the Russia's pipelines into the Middle Eastern oil fields run through Pakistan. That's the right of way there. Afghanistan is simply too mountainous. It is a war zone. It's under U.S. control. India is very much in the American sphere of influence. And so we have Pakistan is basically this one corridor that Russia could use if they felt they needed to intervene militarily with a U.S./Israeli invasion of Iran. See, Russia and the rest of that part of the world have been playing the appeasement game. They've been playing Neville Chamberlain to the United States and saying, well, all right, let them take Afghanistan. Who cares? Oh, let them take Iraq. Who cares? And they're beginning to realize the United States is never going to stop of its own volition. And they're having to draw a line in the oil fields, so to speak. And so the goal here is to get wars going, major wars going in Pakistan, which will make it impossible for Russia to bring convoys through, and also Russia, Georgia at the same time. In fact, I think had the little blow-up they had in Georgia and Russia a while back, if that had succeeded in turning into a prolonged border conflict, I think the invasion of Iran would have followed almost immediately. But Russia just blew right through that, like through wet Kleenex. And I think Putin was sending a message saying, I know what you're doing, and I'm not going to let you do it. And just mm-hmm. came in and just absolutely flattened the defenses there, walked through. And all of a sudden, for a while, for about 2 months after that, Iran fell off the news. Okay? But now it seems to be back, and now it seems like the necessary precursor to a full-on attack on Iran, invasion of Iran, to grab those oil fields in the south, is to somehow make sure that Russia is not going to intervene. And I think that's the reason we're seeing all of this activity in Pakistan.
Well, it's been just horrendous for the Pakistani people, because every time that you have a major military offensive in an area like Swat or Waziristan, various aid agencies are reporting that hundreds of thousands of people have been displaced. They don't even have homes to go back to.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens to them, and how do they get care, and how do they get aid? They don't. So every time either the Pakistani military or the U.S. goes in with the drones, what they seem to be doing, at least, Mike, in my evaluation, is pushing those left standing right into the arms of the Taliban.
Well, they're certainly pushing they're pushing them away from the U.S.
I mean, absolutely.
These targeted drone killings, there's no question. They're killing tremendous numbers of civilian with these flying robots.
Yeah. Women, babies, medically fragile, older people, just wham.
And they're justifying it by saying, well, we also got one of the bad people, and see this bloody piece here? This is the guy that we...
Yeah.
This is the one we wanted to get, this little piece here.
Yeah.
And the people on the ground are saying, no, they're just blowing up innocent people. And it almost does seem designed to create a crisis situation where Pakistan is going to dissolve into a civil war, which, again, would serve the purpose of blockading Russia from being able to supply Iran by ground,
mm-hmm.
and at the same time gives the U.S. the excuse to go into Pakistan and save it from their own, save the nuclear weapons from those dastardly terrorists.
In other words, save Pakistan from itself, if you would.
Yeah, basically, that's it.
Yeah, and I was reading a study that indicated that since 2006, we have killed about 1,000 people with the drone attacks between Afghanistan and Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there doesn't seem to be an understanding on the part of this government that if peaceful revolution is impossible, violent revolution is inevitable. And I watch as our State Department, I watch as our military, time after time, prop up yet another tin pot dictator who does not have the good of their own people really to heart. And where the people of the country seethe and seethe and seethe, and finally, as what happened with the Islamic Revolution, they just say, I'm mad as heck and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Well, that's a continuing pattern. The United States has been playing the same game going back to Batista in Cuba.
Oh, yeah. Pinochet,
Ferdinand Marcos in the Philippines. It's an ongoing permanent pattern, and it always works for the short term. Enrichment of the various political players and corporate entities that make money off of it. And, of course, then we wind up with an entire world that hates the United States.
But it never can work in the long term, and that's the problem with that kind of thinking.
Yeah, but the people who've made the money, they take their money and they retire.
They go.
And it's the next administration's mess to clean up. And don't worry, the rest of the world hates the United States. They only hate us for our freedoms. We've never done anything wrong to them. They just hate us for our freedoms.
Absolutely.
Now, interestingly enough, a little side story came in here. And when we hear about all these so-called suicide bombings going on, the media will declare them a suicide bombing because that's the convenient hook. Nobody really knows, okay, because it's not like there's a note left or anything like that. I mean, we know that in Iraq, a very common trick was to stop a taxi driver, wire his car with explosives, and say, here's your car back, but you got to go to the police station to get your driver's license back.
Right.
And then when the car got to the police station, blow it up and say, oh, he was a suicide bomber. We know that in Israel, a lot of these so-called suicide terror bombings were actually organized crime targeting their competitions, nightclubs, and so forth. We know that in a lot of cases, innocent people are being hired to act as messengers for packages. They say, here, take this box of cookies to my grandmother on the other side of town. I'll pay you when you get back. Boom. Oh, must be a suicide bomber. On and on and on. And we know that deception and cover-up is the rule of the day. Now, interestingly enough, there was a story. We're almost to the end of the segment. I want to wrap this up. Turkey angered Israel by canceling this cooperative exercise they were planning to do, and Israel saying, oh, they just hate us. We've always done this. We don't know why. They're being unreasonable. We're, you know, it's not the Goldstone Report. They just don't like us. They're being anti-Semites. Now we're getting word that apparently Turkish intelligence uncovered an Israeli plan to assassinate their prime minister, who is Muslim and very much pro-Islam. And again, we see Israel going in and carrying out these operations in other countries. I mean, they just arrested another spy for Israel here in the U.S. And then Israel says, we didn't. Why are you unhappy with us? You know, we're not doing anything.
And the ironic thing with that attempted assassination, Erdogan has really worked very hard to be a peacemaker in the region, to bring people together for talks, to bring people together to create opportunities.
See, that's what Israel does not want.
Oh, absolutely, I know.
You know, and in fact, this ludicrous idea that the Goldstone Report is going to interrupt the peace process. Okay, we got to take a break here for some commercials. Call in, join us on the air, 866-582-9933, 866-582-9933. We will be right back.
Cascadia Public Radio.
Listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're talking with Claire here about Pakistan. And the situation here in Pakistan is beginning to remind me very much of what we're seeing in portions of Palestine under the Palestinian Authority, where Abbas really caused a tremendous amount of consternation by almost siding with Israel on the issue of the Goldstone Report. And you're wondering, whose side are you on here? And so now we have Pakistan, where the Pakistan government seems almost oblivious to the hardship and death and injury being caused their own people by the U.S. incursion. And there appears to be a financial motive for this.
Yes, it was the recent passage of the Kerry-Lugar bill by Congress, $7.5 billion going to Pakistan over several years. Now, there are some statements that there is some sort of financial accountability that is going to be put forward for this so that the U.S. has some idea where the money goes. I'm not all that sure.
That's generally when we're pouring the money into these places.
Yeah.
Any bookkeeping that's being done is just a complete... It's a fraud. You know, the money does not reach the people. We've seen that in Somalia and various other places.
And like the most creative writing is in the accounting department.
That's true.
And one of the other things I've noticed right now, and it's got to be pretty terrifying for families in Pakistan, the schools have been shut down. Some of them in the area of Punjab have been shut down indefinitely. When you disrupt a population's opportunity to give their kids an education, you are attempting to destroy the future of that country.
Mm-hmm.
Countries cannot exist in the 21st century without their kids being knowledgeable, being able to understand, being able to compete in a world of ideas. It just does not happen. So this is, again, one of the nasty things that is going on. And my question is, I think, Mike, how soon before we actually see large numbers of U.S. uniformed troops on the ground in Pakistan? I know Blackwater's there,
yes,
or Z, or whatever the heck it's calling itself this week, but I am wondering, I think we are going to start seeing a very noticeable U.S. military presence of some kind in the not-too-distant future.
Well, you know, one aspect we have to look at, there is effectively, functionally, an economic draft taking place in the United States of America. The job situation here is so poor, and especially as people run out of their unemployment benefits, they're down to two choices, sign up for the military or starve to death and become homeless in the streets. And so, as a result, the Pentagon is saying, yes, enlistment is up. Isn't it wonderful? Everybody wants to join the Army. Well, yeah, if starvation's your only alternative, they're going to join the Army.
Mm-hmm.
And so they do have more boots on the ground that they can start deploying to these various places.
But, Mike, let me ask, with our current commitments in Iraq, and I know a lot of the actual military have been displaced by private mercenaries for hire.
Contractors, yes.
Same thing with Afghanistan. And with our troop commitment around the world very, very stressed, I have to wonder how many and how quickly we could actually get into Pakistan should the word come down from the White House and the Pentagon.
I think the goal in Pakistan is to not, and this is just my opinion, I think the goal there isn't necessarily to directly put U.S. boots on the ground, because that would put us into a direct conflict with approaching Russians. And the whole idea of this is to forestall a direct U.S.-Russian conflict.
Confrontation,
everybody
yes.
wants a proxy war.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the goal in Pakistan really is more to foment a civil war and get the Pakistanis to kill each other. We'll give them all the bullets and weapons that they want. But I think that's the real goal. And again, the idea is to basically create a natural combat barrier that would limit Russia's ability to continue to supply Iran. There is no question in the event of hostilities with Iran that the U.S. and Israel will have air superiority over Iran. Supplying by air is extraordinarily expensive. The only reason we did it during the Berlin airlift was simply to prove that we could do it.
Right.
It's like that wonderful that line from the movie The Pentagon Wars, Kelsey Grammer, and he's at the opening and says, mm-hmm. "We won the Cold War because we proved we could shovel the money into the fire faster than the other guy." Mm-hmm. And we laugh at it, but very often that is the thinking of the policymakers. We're going to win this war because we can squeeze more money out of our people than they can squeeze out of their people,
right,
and blow it on these incredible weapon systems like mm-hmm. these bionic bugs they're making now to fly in the window and so forth and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as Pakistan is concerned, and this is true for any of these war zones, the ordinary people who only wanted to be left alone, they are made to suffer in this terrible, terrible privation. And they watch their loved ones blown up. They see the work of a lifetime dissolving before their eyes.
Right.
We're seeing it in Pakistan. We're seeing it in Iraq. We're seeing it in Afghanistan. We're seeing it in Palestine. And at some point, the rest of the world has to stand up and say, this is enough. I mean, how much blood is enough for what's going on here?
Yeah.
Okay?
All right. Well, listen, thank you very much for inviting me.
Well, thank you for being on the show. Everybody in the chat room says that you're much better looking than I am.
Oh, stop.
And because I have the face for radio and everything.
Oh.
So thank you very much. And we're going to have you back from time to time and talking about some other things as well. So thank you very much for joining us. And we're going to move right on here. Call us on the air, 866-582-9933. 866-582-9933. We did have a temporary glitch with the website. We're back up and running now. And a couple of little news stories here as we head to the end of the segment here. Israel, as you know, has been acquiring quite a bit of their military hardware from Germany as war reparations or Holocaust reparations, and they keep asking for more and more and more. Germany just gave Israel a couple of the Dolphin submarines, which are now believed to be nuclear armed, that Israel is now using to threaten the rest of the Mideast. Now Israel is demanding a couple of German surface warships again for free. And the hundreds of millions of euros that Israel is just saying, you should give to us. And, of course, the German people are going to have to pay for their taxes for these German warships to go to Israel. And I think it's got to be reaching a point of grating on the German people for a very simple reason. The German people alive today had nothing to do with Nazi Germany. The Nazis are all pretty much dead and gone. Hitler is gone. The Nazi government is gone. The government of Germany today has no connectivity or continuity with the Nazis. It's not the same country. So the people alive in Germany today had nothing to do with what happened in World War II. The people alive in the United States had nothing to do with what happened in World War II. Why does Israel still feel it has a right to go around the world and say, you must give us this, you must give us that, you owe us all this stuff? Why? On what basis? Certainly here in the United States of America, we sacrificed much blood and treasure to stop Hitler. Doesn't Israel owe us reparations? Don't they at least owe us an expression of gratitude? We've got Holocaust museums in every city in America. I'm not seeing the same number of museums devoted to those Americans who died stopping Hitler. There's a monument stuck over in a corner here and there. It's almost an afterthought. Israel acts like they've got nothing to be grateful for the United States. Talk about how sharper than a serpent's tooth to have a thankless child. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone. I mean, the panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. Our phone lines are open, 866-582-9933, 866-582-9933. And, yes, we are going to have Claire back from time to time to time. We're leaving the headphone and the microphone set up so she can wander in here with her commentary and opinions anytime the mood takes her. Okay. Now, do you remember a long time ago, back during the campaign, when Barack Obama promised open government, that he was going to let bills be seen on the White House website for 5 days before he signed them so that you would have a chance to let your opinion get known. And, of course, that went away. Now we're finding out that Obama's secondary cabinet, the SARs, he has created these 18 new SAR positions that are not subject to congressional approval. And they're basically operating at cabinet-level authority. And now they're not going to be allowed to testify before Congress, even if Congress wants to talk to them. It's walled off. It's part of the Obama administration. What they're doing is private. Congress is being told, you do not have a right to come in and interview these people or ask them to testify about what's going on. So in other words, Obama appears to have created a ghost cabinet that is actually where his authority is being exercised, and it's beyond congressional review. It's a very, very dangerous situation, I think, all these SARs running around the government. And Congress does not have the ability to basically keep a check on them, which is the way it was set up originally when the country was invented. They set up three branches of government to keep an eye on each other. That's what's supposed to happen. Congress was supposed to make the laws. The president is supposed to carry them out. And the court is supposed to make sure that we're all following the rules of the Constitution. The president was never supposed to be in a position to simply write out executive orders that amount to laws himself without Congress and without judicial review. What was that they were saying back during the Clinton years? Stroke of the pen, law of the land, pretty cool. Remember the Clinton White House. U.S. blocks independent inquiry into the Uzbek massacre. Apparently we've got some dead bodies up there that are proving to be an embarrassment. All right, I want to get onto this thing about the climate change because we're seeing more and more polls indicating that belief in the global warming hysteria is definitely on the wane. It's dropping, according to the polls that we're seeing on the corporate media, it's dropped about 20%. Over the last 2 years, gone from 77% 2 years ago. Everybody was buying into it then, three quarters. Now it's down to just about half now. And I think this winter, as it gets colder and colder, and we look out the window, if we stop watching TV and we go look out the window, we're going to see more and more people are realizing that they were completely wrong. They were either lying or they were simply in error in either way. It is rather pointless to try and convene a global government to deal with the issue of climate change when the globalists' own experts don't seem to know what's going on. And yet we're seeing a renewed push of the propaganda coming out. You know, just absolute fear-mongering coming from government and media and from the United Nations. United Nations is saying tourism is going to be destroyed because all the best tourist locations are by the beaches and they're going to be destroyed if you don't submit to global government. It's fear-mongering to sell you a solution that you don't really want in the first place. Remember, every global government that's been attempted in history absolutely crushed down the common people in poverty and servitude. This is why you don't want to go with a global government this time. And by the way, as a technicality, if you look at the geological evidence, the coastlines are always changing. What do you think the continental shelves are? That's where the beach used to be. When the shoreline moves in, the tourists move with it. It's not like they're going to stand there and drown over the next 20 years as the water comes up over their nose. It's just more of the same fear-mongering. Remember about 4 months ago, 5 months ago, we got the former head of Greenpeace admitting on video they just made up all that nonsense about the Greenland ice sheets vanishing in 20 years. If you did the actual mathematics of how much heat energy it would take to actually melt the Greenland ice sheet completely, it was never going to happen, even with the direst forecasts of the global warmers, which we now know to be false because the Earth is getting cooler. It's a scare tactic. They're scaring you into accepting global government. Please don't fall for it. Stand up, call all your politicians, call the White House and say, the globe is getting cooler. These guys don't know what they're doing. They don't know what they're talking about. I will not submit to global government. I don't think Obama has the legal right to sign away our sovereignty in Copenhagen. I don't think he's got the legal right to be selling publicly owned infrastructure to private companies. They're doing it anyway because we let them do it. But I don't think legally they've got the right to do it. We're going to go to the phones. We've got Tim in New Mexico. Aloha, Tim. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hello, Michael. Hey, I just wanted to mention a few things when we were talking about Windows issues. That one guy suggested deleting the .NET framework. Don't. Because otherwise anything in C-sharp or Visual Basic will cease to run. It's kind of like the whole...
That was my understanding, yeah.
Yeah, the whole kingaboo, I mean, that does the dialog box. That's the abstraction. They're over the whole bloody operating system for C-sharp and the ASP, the Visual Basic, and a lot of C++ C programs, although they can still get down to the metal and talk direct without the layer, but... C-sharp, which is where most of your apps are run, forget it.
Yeah, that was my understanding, is that that stuff would all break, that it was an irrevocably intertwined piece of the rat's nest now. And, it just sounded kind of funny. Yeah, just go ahead and delete it. I didn't think that was going to work anyway. Actually, I'm going to delete the whole machine and buy a Mac is what I'm going to do.
That might be a good idea. I haven't tried a Mac yet. I do Linux, do Solaris, do Windows because my job requires Windows.
Well, we went with Windows because when we first moved here to Hawaii, there was not a lot of Mac support around here. Now it's really taking off out here. And we went with Windows because at the time we were setting up our company, the primary animation tool that we wanted to use only ran on Windows. There wasn't a Mac version. That, too, has also changed. We did have a Mac for a while. Unfortunately, the magic smoke escaped from that, and we didn't replace it. But now that Mac has gone over to a Linux derivative, and since I'm so comfortable with Linux anyway, I think probably these machines I've got here will be the last Windows machines I ever own. I've got a bunch of these little junky laptops I was using for this TV show that I'm working on. We're in our last season right now, and as soon as I know that I've done my last bit for them and I'm not going to need these machines, I'm going to put Linux on all of them and just give them away to kids in the neighborhood, to play with. So that's what we're going to do. But yeah, I was a little leery about this delete the net framework thing.
Yeah,
it sounded too drastic. Well, Tim, thank you very much for saving us from ourselves.
All right, I'll let you go here.
All right, thanks an awful lot there. Yeah, just going into the problem with Windows, with any operating system, but especially with Windows, everything is connected to everything. And it's like I said, when I went in this morning and I tried to turn off all this new desktop search, Windows search indexing thing, and when I tried to delete it, it said, if you delete this, the following systems will stop working. And it had a whole bunch of things, including the net framework. It's all glued together. And it's very dangerous to go in and just take something out unless you really know what you're doing here. But like I said, I think the ultimate solution is I'm going to delete the entire computer, and I'm either going to put Linux on it, or I'm just going to start buying Macintosh, assuming we can find enough work to pay for it all. All right, we're going to take a break here. We'll be back with the last segment of our show today after these words from our sponsors.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. I want to respond to that commercial that we just heard, and we were talking about silver. And there is a folkloric basis for all of this. Now, probably you've all grown up with this idea that gold is wonderful for jewelry, but silver is what you want to have for eating utensils and serving whatever in the kitchen, creamers, sugars, whatever. Silver as opposed to gold. And a lot of people never stop to say why. I mean, certainly the kings and queens of Europe could afford gold for their flatware, and some of them did as an expression of wealth and power. But traditionally, there's this aura about silver. And the reason is, during the great plagues that devastated Europe, it was noticed that the nobility, those who had the money to afford eating and drinking utensils made out of silver, seemed a lot less affected by these illnesses. And the reason is theorized to have been that when you are eating with silverware or drinking from a silver drinking vessel, that you are getting minute particles of silver into your system. And it was, in fact, helping to defeat some of these pathogens that were causing some of these plagues. And that this is the reason silver has this sort of special magic cultural aura for eating and drinking utensils. This is why one of the more traditional gifts that you will give a newlywed couple is a pair of silver goblets with which they toast each other's health. So, if you have real silverware, silver goblets, whatever, you might want to use them. We certainly do here. Silver plate is it doesn't do it. And in fact, if you've ever used silver-plated items, you will realize the silver plate comes off almost immediately, which, yeah, there's a certain amount of wear and tear. So that's something to keep in mind. I have a real silver dollar on my bill clip that I'll just rub my thumb over every once in a while. And again, I'm not a doctor. I've played one in the movies, but that's another story entirely. But again, looking back at some of the stuff that seems to have worked in the past, and I know the Orthodox medical establishment says, oh, no, don't pay attention to that. Yeah, the vitamins won't do anything, and silver won't do anything, and cinnamon won't do anything. You've got to buy our product. And they sound like the nutcases over at the global warming cultists who are saying, no, the sun's got nothing to do with it. Global warming is all your fault, and you've got to pay for it. And you've got to do what we tell you. The sun controls the climate. How silly could you be? All right. And so a lot of this stuff, because, you know, we have been around for a long, long time before the doctors showed up with their medicines. And yes, there's a lot of good things in Orthodox medical establishment, but there's a lot of stuff that's there just to extract money from you. And certainly this whole idea of vaccines. I mean, now they're talking about, you know, there's a vaccine for nicotine addiction. They're trying to put out another vaccine for drug addiction. There's an AIDS vaccine, which apparently doesn't actually work. And they've got this vaccine for cervical cancer that's actually harmed a lot of girls who've taken it. They've just approved it for use on boys. Boys don't have cervixes to get cancer with. And yet they've just said, oh, yes, we can give this to boys, too. And what this is, the pharmaceutical companies and the medical establishment, they don't want to sell things for sick people anymore because sick people can die and their families can sue. So the whole focus is shifting to selling medicines and treatments to perfectly healthy people. That's what this is all about. Forget about treating those icky-poo sick people. We're going to make our money selling medicines to people who are perfectly healthy. That's what they're doing. They're pushing all this vaccination stuff here. We are getting reports from Europe of deaths that are thought to be associated with the swine flu vaccine. They're still waiting for autopsies on it. The U.S. government is saying it's coincidence. The official position is any deaths reported in the aftermath of using the vaccine are coincidental. It has been declared by fiat from above. There shall be no deaths attributed to the vaccine. We know during 1976, during the swine flu outbreak back then, the vaccines killed 50 times as many people as the actual illness did. And it looks like we're on path to see the same thing happening again. And we're going to get all this denial. Oh, no. They didn't die from the vaccine. They were hit by a truck or lightning struck them, or they had an unknown, previously undiagnosed, strange tropical illness that just happened to show up and kill them right as they got the shot here. Meanwhile, we're getting more and more confirmation that in Germany, this is breaking out in Germany in Der Spiegel, the government officials are getting one kind of swine flu vaccine. The armed forces are getting the same thing. Everybody else is getting a different vaccine, one that has a lot more of the adjuvants and boosters and all the other crud that's in there. Why, if this adjuvanted vaccine is safe, is the government and the military not taking it? I got an email, it's in the reader's letters section, from somebody on a Navy base saying that they have been informed that swine flu vaccines will be mandatory and they have to get it on the base because they're getting a vaccine not available to the general public. We're seeing this tiered situation happening. where the important people are getting the A vaccine. And the hoi polloi, they're getting the B vaccine. I think it should be very, very alarming. You know, and it just, there's such a push on this. I'm wondering what's going on. I'm reminded, and yes, it's a work of fiction. I'm a big Tom Clancy fan, okay, especially his earlier works. The last book of his that I sort of kind of liked, he was starting to wander off into propagandizing the war on terror, but it was called Rainbow Six. It was the first of the Rainbow Six books where we have this international anti-terror fighting force and everything. And one of the primary stories on there was a bunch of eco-terrorists, total whack job environmentalists who thought the Earth would just be so much more wonderful if there weren't so many people on it. And they were preparing to release a virus across the globe, and they were masked as a pharmaceutical company, and they were selling and handing out this vaccine, which came in two varieties. And the people they liked got version A, and the people they didn't like got version B, and version B actually gave you the disease. Remember last year when Baxter was caught putting out a test vaccine that contained full-strength live bird flu virus? We don't know if it's the one that was being tested in Poland on homeless people where there were about 20 deaths, but somebody's vaccine was being tested in Poland that turned out to be killing the people it was tested on. So, they're either very reckless or something very dangerous is going on. But when we get these reports that the government and armed forces are getting one kind of vaccination, and you, the ordinary taxpaying citizen, is getting something very different, that is untested, that is fast-tracked, I would be worried. I would be very worried. You know, as a survivor of the 1957 flu outbreak, in theory, I'm immune to the new swine flu anyway. I'm not going to be getting the shot. Yes, I'm rubbing my silver dollar bill clip, and I'm eating lots of cinnamon. I put cinnamon in my coffee every morning. I'm taking my vitamins and all the rest of that. But I don't want that flu vaccine shot. I haven't had a flu shot. I don't remember the last time I had a flu shot. It's been like 20 years, and I don't get the flu, by the way. So, yeah, it just, this idea that we're going to make ourselves rich selling medicine to people who are perfectly healthy, and now we're starting to get reports of people who are being injured and killed by this vaccine. You've got to be very, 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 very careful. Meanwhile, a whistleblower at the BBC, former BBC employee, has blown the whistle that BBC's TV and radio producers and performers, there's a major cocaine problem. It's part of the image. And I understand how this works. I used to work in Hollywood at a time when cocaine was part of the cachet. You know, we were coming out of the Vietnam heroin addictions. They'd all blown out and burned out and gone away. And cocaine was the new in trendy drug. And people didn't realize just how incredibly addictive it is. And everybody was doing a line before the story meetings. And some really bad, crummy scripts came out of that. But apparently it is part of the culture at BBC, which is probably why they wound up announcing that World Trade Center 7 had collapsed 25 minutes before it really did. But in any event, this appears to be a problem at BBC. We don't know how they're going to deal with it or even if they'll care. But that's what we're getting out of the BBC. All right, that's it for our show. We'll be back tomorrow morning for our end of the week wrap-up, looking back, 11 a.m. Central here on the Genesis Communication Network. Until then, stay safe, stay healthy, stay skeptical, hug your loved ones, drive carefully, lots of cinnamon, fondle your silver, real silver, not the plated stuff, and aloha, America.